The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome to the Seahawkers Podcast with your host, Adam Emmert.
Not every year of my life has been a steady transition to more awesome. Maybe have some perspective, people.
And Brandon Schultz.
Now that they have Blitz for Six, there is no way the Patriots are going to win a Super Bowl. Thank you.
Go Hawks!
This is the Seahawkers Podcast. I'm Brandon Schultz, member of the Military Seahawkers, and joining me, Montana Seahawker and good buddy, Adam Emmert.
Yeah, I'm here today, but I'm not going to lie. I am hung the
catfish
over.
Oh, all right.
Yeah,
is that why we don't do this on weekends usually?
I don't normally go out on the weekends, but you know, this is like the first time I've been out to the bar in probably like 3 months.
Wow.
And
well, that'll do it.
Yeah. 7 beers later and I'm still struggling the next day.
Well, so, you picked the wrong night because we've had just a rat. We've been holding off doing this show just after you have bad news after bad news. You know, Russell Wilson has his nude photos hacked and put out on the web. Ciara gets into a car crash and ends up being okay. And then TJ Lang ends up signing with Detroit after visiting Seattle. It's just a string of bad news.
Right. And you wonder why I was drinking.
Yeah, well, we didn't know about the Lang stuff until Sunday morning.
Well, that was pre-rejection drinking.
you knew that after he left Seattle without a contract. That was it.
That was it. Yeah. I've yet to see a dude like leave Seattle without a contract and be like, oh, okay, well, now I'll sign.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is kind of unusual.
Yeah. When they get on the plane, it's over. Yeah.
Well, but, he got on the plane and left Detroit, but I guess he has to go back home at some point. So,
well, yeah, according to his wife. So,
yeah,
can't pass up that opportunity.
No, it kind of makes sense in that way, but he didn't have to toy with our hearts by following the Seahawks on Twitter and then getting our hopes up that way.
I hope you learned your lesson that Twitter doesn't matter.
Twitter doesn't matter. That is the lesson.
That is the lesson. But yeah, he strung us along. He strung us along for a little while. I don't know. I've had this situation 2-3 times in my life where, you know, you're kind of pursuing a girl and like it comes down and she's going to like choose one dude or another, you know.
Yeah,
like and she kind of strings it out for like a couple weeks or whatever, and like you throw it all out there, you put it all on the line, and then they turn and choose the other person. And it seems like that's what happened to the Seahawks over this weekend. You know, they bring in TJ Lang not just for like a couple hour visit, like a couple day visit, you know, show him the sights and do all that, and what does he do? He chooses his hometown girlfriend, man.
Yeah.
Like, whatever. Get out of here.
He didn't string us along, though. It was just one day. So at least there's
two
that.
Days. 2 days.
Right.
He was supposedly coming Friday and then whatever, and then Saturday. It just took too damn long.
Well, you know what we have for people today to help boost their spirits if they're down about this offensive line stuff? Look, we have just as strong as offensive line as before. So, you know, really, what have you lost? So we're bringing on Rob Staton of SeahawksDraftBlog.com, and he's going to give us an update of some of the things he saw at the combine and give us an idea of where the Seahawks may be going in the draft.
Yeah, absolutely. A great interview. Chock full of great information as usual. So look, and you just said the offensive line is the same as it was before. It's not though, Brandon, because there are other things that happened other than Katie Lang. All right.
That's true.
All right. Like, I mean, TJ Lang, whatever Lang this stupid dude is.
You may not want to go with the KD Lang because I don't know if you've, you know, back in the day when Jim Rome was calling Jim Everett Chris Everett, things did not work out well for him.
Yeah, that's true fact. Yeah.
So I would avoid going with the KD Lang reference to
right,
TJ.
Right. What? KD Lang's not a talented artist? All right. Well, here's the thing is, yes, there are other things have transpired.
That's and, true.
Luke Jokel is now a member of the Seattle Seahawks, a guy who's actually played offensive line before. It's something he's done like the majority of his adult life.
Actually started as a true freshman on the offensive line at Texas A&M.
Right. Right. On a pro style offense sort of team in Pat Shurmur.
Spread offense. Yeah.
Not at that time. It was Pat Shurmur.
Well, eventually. I mean, once they had Johnny Manziel and
whatever. Who gives a crap? Point being, Luke Jokel's a guy. He's actually played in a real pro style offense. He's actually played left tackle. I know a lot of people are very lukewarm on this, considering that, you know, he's coming off the knee injury and in his performance in his time in Jacksonville. But I'll ask you a serious question, Brandon. Who's ever gone to Jacksonville and had their career get better?
Well, that's why when I hear people
other
say
other than Mark Brunell.
Yeah, that was a long time ago.
That's what I'm saying.
Well, that's why when I hear people say this is Robert Gallery 2.0, I'm not quite ready to buy
not
that
even
yet
close
because
to say.
Robert Gallery, yes, he was the number two overall pick, you know, uber talented guy, never really worked out for him. A guy who moved from tackle inside to guard. Mm-hmm. And but Luke Jokel is not a guy that Tom Cable has worked with before. And like you said, in Jacksonville, not a whole lot of guys seem to come out of that area with and have success.
Success. Yeah, no, you don't have it there. It's where talent goes to die.
Right.
Like, it really does. And here's the other thing. If you're going to say, well, this is Robert Gallery 2.0. How old was Robert Gallery when he came to Seattle? And how old is Luke Jokel?
I think Gallery was a couple years. I want to say he was 27. Or was he in his 30s already? I thought he was in his 30s.
I think he was in his 30s.
But Luke Jokel, only 25.
Yes, that's the entire point. So you get a guy who was the second overall draft pick in the 2013 draft, a surefire can't miss left tackle, according to everybody that's ever written about drafts, and goes to Jacksonville, struggles underneath a terrible organization, blows out his knee, and you get him at really about the only price that the Seattle Seahawks can afford for offensive linemen. $7 million guaranteed, can get up to $8 million, but that was the type of signing that was the best that you could hope for. Some guy who was a reclamation project, somebody who actually had some experience, and somebody that you hoped could put it together at a bargain basement price. And that's what you got. Look at what all these other left tackles have been going for out on the open market right now.
Oh my goodness.
Russell Okung got paid.
Yes, he did. Good for him, too. As much as people crush him for being his own agent and not getting that great of a deal, it was an okay deal. You know, the thing that bothers me the most about Russell Okung going to Denver and mm-hmm. people crushing about him about it, going into that contract, they were saying, well, Okung's not going to get very much anyway because the tackle market this year isn't very strong. And so when he got $5 million, his contract being $5 million, he ends up getting $8 million because he was able to play the whole season. And that was about as good as he could have done. And the crazy thing is that he could have stayed in Denver and made less. He leaves Denver and he gets more by going to the.
All I know is this: Russell Okung has $33 million in his pocket in the course of one calendar year.
Yeah.
I think he did pretty well.
Okay.
And he didn't have to pay a dumb agent. You know what I mean? Like, that's all his cheddar.
Yeah.
He gets to keep all of it. So he did fine. But that's a great, I mean, $25 million guaranteed for Okung. And what was it? $12 million a year or something like that? You saw Whitworth get, you know, big time money like that as well.
$24 million guaranteed over 2 years.
Right. All of these left tackles are getting giant checks. Giant checks. So
even the right tackles too, because Ricky Wagner.
But I mean, that's what makes Jokel look like a steal. I mean, and look, and if you say I don't know if he can play, he stinks or whatever. Just a simple question, Brandon: is he a basketball player?
No. He's a real life left tackle. Like, he's played that position before.
Right. Has all the measurables, and you know, just not but. 3.5 years ago, everybody was saying that he was a real deal, or 4 years ago, a real deal left tackle that was can't miss. And now he's terrible and can't play.
Well, and see, and he's 25. That's the thing I wonder. So I've been thinking about this as far as, you know, how much credit do we give Tom Cable? And I feel like if you think that George Fant is a success, then you have to feel that Tom Cable is a good coach. Because I know you're laughing. George Fant is a success, though. This was a guy that...
He's a success. You're a success in getting your catfish quarterback killed.
He never played the position. And yet Tom Cable was able to coach him up enough that he was able to start ahead of other guys who had played the position before.
Because of whose evaluation? Because you can't, for the life of me, I still to this day, I will swear to God, Reese Odhiambo is a better player than George Fant at offensive
line.
Then
why wasn't he starting at tackle?
Because our guys, our coaching staff, and Tom Cable don't know who to start. And if you want to know where the evidence for that is, I give you Exhibit A, Jari Evans. I give you Exhibit B, Eric Winston. I give you guys that actually can't play, that they said couldn't play, and then put dudes out there that can't play.
So this, if that's your case, then I am willing to bet that Jokel isn't even going to make it off the preseason roster. Because if that's how you feel about this team, then Jokel is simply here as an ego boost for George Fant so that they can march Jokel out there in the preseason and they can say, once George Fant wins the job, hey, you beat out a guy who was the number two overall pick in 2013. Go out there and go get him, buddy.
This isn't a Hallmark movie. Okay, this isn't a Lifetime movie situation. Sally Fields doesn't star in this film. Okay, like this isn't a feel good flick. This is Left Tackle. And I give you 7 million reasons why that will not happen. 7 million. Because they weren't giving Jari Evans millions of dollars guaranteed, and they weren't giving Eric Winston millions of dollars guaranteed. Luke Jokel will be on the team. Now, whether or not he's starting is a whole nother deal, but he'll be on the team throughout the season.
Yeah, we don't know how much guaranteed money he has yet.
Yeah, we do. It's $7 million.
Guaranteed?
Guaranteed.
Wow.
Yep. Yep, I read it this morning. The contract details came out.
Yeah, they're not cutting him then.
They're not going to cut him. This is it, to make George Fant feel warm and fuzzy.
Well, they might start ahead of him still.
And if he does, I swear to God, I will go down to the VMAC and hit Tom Cable in the knee with an iron pipe a la Nancy Kerrigan. Like, I'll do that to him. I will cap him in the knee with a lead pipe.
Well, because Jamarcus Webb, he was the highest paid offensive lineman last year, and he ends up getting cut from the team. Now, it wasn't $7 million cut, but still cut nonetheless for your highest paid lineman.
He wasn't making much. And on top of that, like, look, if you want to look at your track record of free agency in offensive linemen, it hasn't been great for the Seahawks, no doubt. But if you looked at Webb was universally thought as the worst player at his position year in, year out on all these other teams up until his 1 year in Oakland where he succeeded a guard.
Every other tackle.
Right. Exactly. What could go wrong?
Yeah.
So the thing with Jokel is that if you ask around the league, nobody says that he's a dominant left tackle, but everybody says he's okay.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's the thing. Like every argument about this offensive line and everybody who's pissed off that we haven't splurged and brought in one of these big time guys. Here's the thing is that we don't need to go from a mediocre line to an awesome line to succeed. We need to go from a dumpster fire to just somewhat serviceable.
Mm-hmm.
And Luke Jokel has that ability in him.
Well, and
he's
that's
at least shown that.
Going back to the point I was making about Cable before, if he can make George Fant serviceable, you would think that he could make a guy like Luke Jokel a little bit better, you know, better enough than George Fant to start at left tackle.
You'd hope so. The talent's there.
Right.
So at least you're starting with that. You know, a guy that really does have all the tools. And, you know, for the money, it was a decent signing. Am I fired up? Am I super stoked for the Luke Jokel experiment? Not really.
Oh, I would have been fired up if we got TJ Lang, though.
Well, yeah, that's what you get for hoping. I mean, everybody had to feel that there's a lot of people that just thought this was a done deal. Like, to me, at best, it was a 50-50 shot. And I think there's a few reasons for it. I think one of the biggest things that we don't think about as fans is sure, everybody comes and they play at CenturyLink, you know, at some point throughout their career. They see the city of Seattle in the area, and it's beautiful and it's cool. And it's a, you know, it's a beautiful vacation-like setting, correct?
Yeah.
And I think once these guys come to go and explore free agency, and they come to South Alaska and realize just how far they're going to be away from their friends and away from their families, and how much different their life is going to be, suddenly that beautiful, quaint little vacation area seems like it's on the other side of the world. And I think that's something that hurts us in free agency. I really do.
Yeah, could be. There's something that seems to hurt us in free agency, because we do not appear to have a shot very often at top offensive line talent in free agency.
Well, at least now we can say that, you know, we're batting 500 when it comes to bringing in TJs in free agency.
There you go.
Yeah. I mean, because we had TJ Houshmandzadeh, you know,
yeah,
a few years ago, and then we got him. Thank God. He was awesome.
Oh, yeah. I want to go back. Well, I guess he wasn't Pete Carroll era free agents, but I still want to do our show where we take a look at some of the worst free agent signings. If we were to go back into Holmgren and Mora era free agent signings, Houshmandzadeh definitely would be on that list.
He's definitely on that list. Yep. Deion Branch is somewhere on that list.
So many receivers that came in. Well, Deion Branch was traded for, but yeah.
Yeah.
Not what? Good.
Not good.
Well, while we're on the topic of offensive line, before the Luke Jokel signing, Gary Gilliam became the team's second highest paid offensive lineman just by getting the lowest restricted free agent tender. And so we, you know, we talked a little bit about restricted free agents and whether or not the Seahawks would tender certain players and whether they wouldn't. And so we had guys like Brock Coyle become free agents because they didn't get a tender. Deshaun Shedd is now a free agent. He's out there. You would expect or hope that the Seahawks would make some kind of an offer to him. But Gary Gilliam gets the lowest restricted free agent tender, and which gets him about $1.8 million in a contract. And after seeing some of the money being thrown around to the right tackles and left tackles, it almost makes you wonder if the Seahawks shouldn't have put a second round tender on Gilliam. He could be gone if, you know, after the market settles down a little bit and other teams start looking around and go, oh, well, Gilliam's only making 1.8.
Yeah, no. I mean, why? If you're any other team in the league, if you're one of the 31 other teams, and you're looking for offensive linemen, why would you go to the team with the worst one, the worst one, and pluck a player off of that? Why would you do that? There's no reason for it. Nobody's going to touch Gilliam. Nobody's going to touch him. Hooray, he's our, you know, starting right tackle. Great.
So it's 1.8 too much?
Yeah. 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 Him being on the roster is too much.
Uh-huh.
Instead of like Mike Remmers or somebody.
Did you see what Mike Remmers got, though?
I didn't think it was that much. It was only like $7-8 million a year.
Yeah, that's well, a lot.
So, so you're going to pay TJ Lang how much?
Yeah, I would much rather pay TJ Lang double that amount.
Well, that's my point. You can't seem to. We just afford Luke Jokel for $7-8 million, and we couldn't afford Mike Remmers too for $7-8 million.
Well, I'm sure you could have. It's whether or not you really hell? Want him.
Yes. He plays actual offensive line. I just, how do you look at any one of these dudes other than a Fetty and Britt and be like, I want him on my team. I want him to be a starter.
Yeah. Well, I think so. Okay. Let's talk about this TJ Lang thing, because he does play right guard for the Packers, or he did play for the Packers at right guard last year. He's played other positions too. But you have to wonder if the Seahawks were looking at him as either right guard or right tackle or some other position. I think he's played all over the line due to injuries in Green Bay. So were they looking at that? And maybe are the Seahawks considering moving Ifedi out to right tackle?
I don't know. I heard a pretty funny joke that was told on the Brock and Salk show by their little producer guy behind the glass. And basically they were like, okay, so you get, you know, Jokel, who was playing guard before he, you know, this last year. Then you go out and you get TJ Lang, who's played guard. And then you got, you know, Effetti, who's now a guard, and Glowinski, who's now a guard, and Britt, who used to be a guard. Like, they're just going after all the guards. Like, who do you play at tackle? And the guy was like, you don't play anybody at tackle. You play, you just invent new positions. You have outside left guard, inside left guard, center guard, right inside guard, right outside guard. And you just go all guards. Like, maybe that's what their plan was. I don't know.
That could be. I mean, maybe we'll draft some tight ends to play tackle. I think that makes sense.
Why not? Who knows at this point? But on the flip side, Brandon, not spending money on TJ Lang, that saves you a bunch of cap space to go after a washed up over the hill running back. So that'll be sweet.
Man, they are bringing on all the over the hill running backs. Although, well, one of them's not over the hill. But
Murray?
Right.
We don't even know if he's good.
Yeah. Latavius Murray coming from the Raiders, coming for a visit. Eddie Lacy from the Packers coming for a visit. Adrian Peterson from the Vikings, and Jamal Charles from the Chiefs.
Yeah. No. Just none of those guys.
Well, here's the thing. I can understand the thinking on this to a degree, bringing in a veteran guy when you don't know if your guys in the position right now are going to be able to stay healthy.
Like, right.
Bringing in Jamal Charles as a potential guy who could fill in if CJ Procise doesn't work out. If he can't make it through training camp without getting hurt, then Jamal Charles kind of fills in nicely as that style of running back. Adrian Peterson, the big knock on him is that he doesn't really fit what the Seahawks have done in their system traditionally.
How is that a true fact?
Because he does not he doesn't run well out of when the quarterback's out of shotgun, and the Seahawks tend to line up at shotgun more than other teams. So
I guess maybe in the last year, but before that it was all under center in Russell Wilson handing off to Marshawn and two backs.
Yeah. So I and that's
in a power running back.
Right.
And he doesn't fit this system. Go fly a kite.
Well, that's why it would make sense to go. The Seahawks have shown that they can change their style and system based on the talent that they have.
Right.
So yeah, if Adrian Peterson would come in, then yes, maybe they would look at, you know, having a solid fullback more so than they did last year, you know.
Put Adrian as a single back. He likes being in the one back set.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Nothing wrong with that. Russell Wilson can do that. He's, you know, he's one of those real quarterbacks that can go and put his hands underneath a dude's butt and take a ball.
Yeah, he can do that.
He can do that.
Especially when he's not hurt. So,
yeah.
And last year hurt a lot more. So being back in shotgun made a lot of sense for a lot of those games.
Right. Exactly. So, yeah, I mean, it's just I have no interest in any of these guys. I have none. And I understand you're like, well, for injury insurance and rah, rah. All right. You got a whole draft and a whole undrafted free agent period to find the next Thomas Rawls in that group. Like I don't need to spend $1 of cap space on an aging running back. No, thank you. I want no part of that.
I think part of the thinking in it too is that I think a lot of other teams are looking at the draft and as a spot. And so it's really bringing down the running back market. That's why a lot of these guys are still out there, even though it's a week past the initial tampering period where guys could talk to other teams. You know, you didn't see any running backs get signed right away as soon as free agency started. So there's not a lot of interest out there for them. And you can see as guys are coming in to take visits, you don't have that chance of nobody's super excited about signing any of these guys. So it's going to bring the market down. And what do the Seahawks do? They value guys where they can get good value for them.
Sure. I mean, I guess if they don't cost very much at all and they're not going to cause a stink, then fine. I mean, Jamal Charles doesn't make it out of the preseason. So, I mean, that's just a waste of a roster spot for a young guy who could actually develop.
You only guarantee his salary based on the number of games he played. You know, that's not the problem. Incentivize some of these contracts.
The money's not the problem. Is that he's taking up a roster spot then for a young guy that could be coming up and being a contributor.
Now they bring in running backs all the time from, you know, they have all those. George Farmer could come back.
Yeah, well, hey, here's the thing. If we're worried about depth, good news is Tremaine Pope has made it through the process of the unrestricted process. And like, apparently he's
an exclusive rights guy. So
yeah. So we keep Tromaine. Our hope is still in Pope. We still got that guy.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. I think it's. I think
and
it's Kristen a waste.
Michael will probably still be out there on the street. So you know. Can have all those
dude,
guys.
There's somebody. I mean, and then like, isn't D'Angelo Williams available right now?
Probably.
You can get him for a quarter of AP money, and he's a better back right now.
Yeah, and he's shown that he could stay relatively healthy backing up. Yes. Le'Veon Bell.
Yeah, he was great insurance. Yeah, give me, and he fits that smash mouth, tough running style that Pete Carroll wants to desperately get back to.
There's lots of running backs out there. That's why that's. You know, it's a good market for getting a veteran guy that maybe you don't have to pay a whole lot to.
Yeah. Well, I would go for a second tier guy out of that group even still and save that money and go out and try to find yourself another offensive lineman if you can somewhere. I mean, look, here's the thing. Breno's still out there. We could still go after Breno.
Sure. Yeah.
Sebastian Vollmer's still out there. I don't know if he's going to retire.
I think he's going to retire.
Yeah, I don't know how bad that hip situation is. You know, there's a few guys out there, you know. I believe Jake Long is still available.
Jari Evans is out there.
Yeah, there you go. If you want that veteran guard that can play.
Eric Winston's out there.
Yeah, I think he's now officially.
He might be done now.
Yeah, to that point. But, yeah, I mean, I think the idea that they've gone really hard after veteran guys that they actually think will play and have committed to that. I think they've learned their lesson. I really do. I from last year, after hearing John Schneider talk about it, pre-combine, and people ask him, you know, well, I mean, do you kind of regret getting rid of those dudes? And he's like, yeah, that, you know, in hindsight, that wasn't good. So I think they've learned their lesson and they are trying to get some experience here. So let's not waste money trying to get experience at the running back position. And let's, you know, load up on a bunch of second tier offensive linemen and hope one of them works.
It does feel like they're at least trying or going to try this offseason. So I remain optimistic.
Well, you can say for sure that there was a crap given about the offensive line this offseason. Like they made a real live effort at it.
Right. I guess we can't say that anymore.
No. Andre Smith is still available. Former Viking.
Yeah.
Right tackle.
Also,
I mean, these are all guys that you could kick the tires on for $4 or $5 million.
And then nobody's in a hurry, it seems like, to sign them.
No, they'll be out there. And, you know, as we talk with Rob Staton a little later on here in the show, you'll understand that this whole there's not a lot of offensive linemen in this draft thing is a real thing. It's going to be difficult for us to find an offensive lineman in this draft because it means that you'd be passing up on some tremendous, tremendous talent at different positions and positions that are still of need for us, whether that be safety or corner or you linebacker, you name it. There's real talent out there to be had rather than getting a subpar guy because you're drafting solely on need.
All right. Well, before we get to our interview with Rob, Adam, how about this? You know, I was starting to get my hopes up that we were going to get Brock Coyle on the show based on some of the Twitter conversations we were having with him. And then we find out just a couple days ago, Brock Coyle signed by our rival 49ers.
Keep getting them checks. Keep getting them checks. I mean, how many opportunities does a guy like Brock Coyle get in a lifetime to like get paid?
Yeah, well, you know, just goes to San Fran on a 1-year deal, but there's going to be an opportunity for Coyle to start in San Francisco and then the year later get paid.
I mean, I don't know how much he signed for. It wasn't much more than a million or so, right?
I don't think it was very much. It wasn't up last time I checked.
Right, but when you say that out loud and you think as a Montana boy like Brock is, yeah, I'll play over for the 49ers for a little over $1 million. That works for me. That's life-changing money. I could live off that.
And my point is, it's a 1-year deal, but he's playing for a bad team. You get a chance to go in there and start right away and show other teams what you can do.
Yeah, he's never going to start over Bobby Wagner.
No.
So, I mean,
or KJ Wright.
What are you going to do? You can go somewhere where you can play. I just saw some people not excited about his defection and, like, you know, kind of giving him the business about it. And
I would have rather him go to the Raiders.
Well, sure. Yeah. I mean, I'm not excited about it, but I don't hold it against him, man.
I'll hold it against him a little bit.
Yeah.
Going to a rival, but I'm not going to spend too much time being mad at him.
Yeah.
All right, Adam, what do you say we get to our interview with Rob Staton.
Sounds good, man. I was glad he was able to make some time with us now that he's got the UK Seahawkers to chat with. I didn't know if he'd ever want to talk to us again. So it was nice. Nice to have him on for sure.
Well, before we get to our interview with Rob, I want to talk about Pristine Auction, Adam. I'm pretty excited because I'm already looking forward to Pick'em League prizes.
Yes.
And I found one. I found you a did. Prize on Pristine Auction, a Pete Carroll autographed mini helmet.
Oh, okay.
Next show, I should be able to tell you how it looks and hopefully have it here and to be able to check it out.
That's very cool. A lot of really cool items on their site, no doubt about it.
Yeah, you can go to seahawkerspodcast.com/auction. I did that now, and I'm already looking down the list. It looks like there's a Walter Jones signed Seahawks throwback mini helmet, an Earl Thomas signed full-size speed helmet. That looks pretty good.
Ooh. What's that? Wait, what's the bidding on that right now?
That one's 3 days left. It's at 210.
Really?
For a full-size helmet autographed by number 29.
Yeah. Okay, let's keep an eye on that one.
And here's just, 3 days out, a Cliff Avril signed Seahawks full-size speed helmet, $70.
Wow, are you serious? Let's keep an eye on that, too. Yeah.
Keep an eye on that.
Yeah, the housing commissioner, man.
Go to seahawkerspodcast.com/auction, and you can check out and see what they have in terms of Seahawks gear right through that link. And now let's welcome back Rob Staton of SeahawksDraftBlog.com. He's also the co-host of 3000 NFL Mock Draft. And this is the premier time of year to have Rob on to take a look at the combine this last week and maybe what we can expect to see from the Seahawks coming up in the draft. Rob, welcome back. How you doing?
Really good, guys. Thanks for having me on again. And really excited about this draft class. This is a really exciting draft that we're facing here. Lots of great options for the Seahawks. So it's going to be an exciting time.
Lots of great options, but as I've heard from you, Rob, not a lot of great options on the offensive line, which to me, it feels like a lot of Seahawks fans that we recognize the point of need on the offensive line. And yet this sounds like a pretty weak offensive line class.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to find solutions for, the long-term future left tackle, or if you want to find even a right tackle, it's going to be really difficult in this draft. Not that I think necessarily the Seahawks want any more youth on their offensive line. You know, that O-line was pretty green as it was a year ago. So adding more inexperience to it this year is probably not the best thing. I was quite encouraged listening to John Schneider say that they want to go and find some experience, maybe in free agency, just to give this line a bit of a boost. And that in fairness, there are sort of one or two interesting tackle options on the open market and a few interior guys too, so it wouldn't be a big surprise if the Seahawks find two or three veterans to provide some competition to inject some quality as well into the offensive line. But this is definitely not going to be a draft where you come out of it with the Dallas Cowboys offensive line for the next 10 years. This is going to be a draft where maybe what you can do is set up the core of your defense for the next few years. You should be able to get a really good cornerback, a really good safety, and maybe a really good linebacker out of this class. And if the Seahawks could do that with some of their guys aging, and heading towards 30, they can hopefully set this up, this defense up, not just to be, great for another sort of 2, 3, 4 years, but maybe for another 6, 7, or 8.
So, Rob, you said that the draft overall is kind of weak when it comes to offensive linemen, but I guess there's just a part of me that seems to believe that there's got to be a tackle in that draft who played tackle past, say, like the eighth grade, unlike George Fant, like maybe actually, played it some in college and it has some experience. I mean, there's got to be a guy in this draft who's better than the worst left tackle in all of football.
Well, you see, that's the interesting thing, because the two offensive tackles that are going to go in the first round are two guys who've played 1 year of college football. Garrett Bowles was a JUCO. He played at Snow College and was, like a five-star recruit in the JUCOs, and went to Utah because he's an LDS Mormon. But he was being recruited by, Alabama and Auburn and all the big schools. So he went to Utah. And he's got 1 year of college experience, and it shows. He's not very strong. He's incredibly athletic, but he's not strong. So he's maybe going to take 6 to 7 weeks into the season before he's starting to see sort of the strength program really come to him, and he's going to look as good as he can be. And I think he's going to be a really good player, but he is 25 in May. And then the other guy's Ryan Ramczyk, who was at Wisconsin, who was another a guy. I don't think he was particularly interested in football at the start of his career. You know, quit the game, went away, decided he wanted to give it a crack after all, went through some small schools, eventually getting an opportunity at Wisconsin. And he was a one-and-done player as well. So he's not particularly experienced. And if you actually look through the list of players, it's full of guys like this. So the Troy tackle, Antonio Garcia, not particularly experienced. Roderick Johnson is fairly experienced from Florida State, but has put 2 years of really mediocre tape out there to the point where he was being projected as like a top 10 prospect a couple of years ago in the future and may sort of go in the second or third round. So it really is as bad as advertised. And unless you want to sort of give Forrest Lamp a chance at Western Kentucky, he was the guy who actually started at left tackle when George Fant was there. If you actually want to give him a chance and see if he can provide an answer, well, you're going to do that with a guy who's got pretty short arms, is probably better served to kick inside, and he's still a Western Kentucky tackle. And I sense that maybe the Seahawks fans have had enough of those.
I don't know. I love Lamp. I love him a lot. I think everybody, they get hung up on this arm size thing. And it feels a lot like quarterbacks in the sense that, oh, he's too short. Well, his arms are too short. They're too short. I get the measurables to a degree, but I mean, what, Brandon, I think we had talked about it, like Lamp's arms were like just slightly under the ideal or something like that. Like, I mean, if he's got other skills and other things to make up for, you know, one deficiency, I just don't see that as like just being a make or break thing for a player. But it seems like when a lot of these NFL scouts look at these guys that, you know, if it's not, what is it, 33 inch arms, whatever the number is, that they all lose their little minds over?
Like, I don't think that's the ideal. I think that's actually the minimum, isn't it? Like, the Seahawks don't have any guys with arms shorter than that except for their backup center, right?
So you got George Fant, who's got long arms. Fantastic. That just means he flails like in a larger area while being a traffic cone. Like, I mean, I could give a crap about his arm length and whether or not he can freaking block, you know? Like, I don't know. I mean, Rob, is this arm length thing, is this really, these long levers, is this really a thing? I mean, is it that critical?
It's an interesting point because there is one high profile offensive tackle who was drafted really early in 2008, and Jake Long, who's got short arms. He had sub 33 inch arms. I think there's kind of a bogus report on Joe Thomas's arm length. I think he was actually reported to have really short arms as well, but I think that's not true. I think his arm length is actually pretty standard. The reason why it's a bit of an issue sometimes is that if you have a defensive lineman who has got 35, 36 inch arms, they can get into the frame, you know, because they're rushing the edge, they can get into the frame of a tackle, they can jar them back. And if they haven't got the length to sort of, you know, offer a counter punch, you can knock them off balance and it can really get them out of their kick slide. So it is something that teams are wary of. But then there are players that have shown that they can play left tackle with shorter arms. The best example is probably Zach Martin, who was the left guard at Dallas, who was, you know, a really accomplished left tackle at Notre Dame when he was in college, and he's plays guard in the NFL, but I've no doubt at all that he could play tackle if he needed to, if there was an injury to Tyrone Smith, for example. So, you know, there are players that can do that, and Forrest Lamp may be one of those, but it's kind of the outlier. It's like, ideally you don't want to have them to have short arms, but if you look at the overall profile of the player, and if you really like a lot of aspects about him and you want to give him the chance to start there and see how he fares, then it's a possibility as well.
Now, one of the things we've talked about in the past with you, Rob, is your trench explosion formula. And judging by what you've seen out of the combine so far, maybe some of the pro day reports that are starting to come in, are those, because we've been able to determine, or you have been able to determine, which types of guys the Seahawks like to look for. It was how you picked or how you kind of forecasted Jermaine Ifedi going to the Seahawks last year. Are there any types of guys that we should be looking for this year on the offensive line that fit into that ideal trench explosion formula number? And maybe you could explain the trench explosion formula for some of the people who aren't familiar with it.
So very briefly, I mean, Tom Cable a couple of years ago did a town hall meeting and was kind of asked what his ideal offensive lineman is. And he said that when they do these off-season workouts, they want to see a guy who will jump 31 inches in the vertical, a 9-foot broad jump, and do at least 27 reps on the bench press. And Pete Carroll and John Schneider, funnily enough, were one of the observers at the bench press at the combine for the offensive lineman. You know, they actually personally went and watched that. So they place a lot of importance in these three specific tests. I know there's a lot of talk about spark, and that's very relevant for different positions. But it seems like on the offensive line, they've really zoned in on the explosive testing, the broad and the vertical, and the bench press. So the players in this class that would... What we did is we kind of calculated, I don't know if people have seen this, but Pat Kerwin, who's a confidant of Pete Carroll, came up with a formula which essentially added the score, you know, added the measurements together in each of the broad, the vertical, and the bench reps, added them together and got a score out of 100. But the problem with his formula was it really didn't offer much in terms of the difference between, you know, a good and a bad broad jump. So, for example, you would get 8.5 points for an 8.5 broad, and you'd only get 9 points for a 9 broad, and yet you're hitting one's an ideal and one's, you know, significantly below the ideal. So we wanted to create a formula that was the better representative of the broad jump, essentially, that gave that more significance and an equal, if not more important, footing compared to the other two tests. So we came up with this trench explosion formula. An ideal score is a 3.00. Anything above that is exceptional. We went back and looked at all of Seattle's previous draft picks, and they all reached this mark. You know, even Justin Britt, you know, people wondered why they took Justin Britt. It gave us some clarity on that, you know, that he was the only player left on the draft board who they could have taken who matched this formula. So it helps us pick a fade. The guys in this draft class, but there's only three that hit the 3.00. And then there's Isaac Asiata, who's the guard at Utah, who's like a 2.97. So he's one bench rep away. So we're going to include him as well. But Forrest Lamp, we talked about, he made it. Garrett Bowles, the left tackle at Utah, made it. And a guard from San Diego State called Nico Siragusa made it as well. So they're the four from the combine. We're going through the pro day circuit at the moment, and you will see players who weren't invited to the combine are going to test and are going to sort of hit this mark too. And there was a player earlier today, a Purdue guard called Jason King, who's a guard and he did some drills at center as well, who reached the mark too. So we're going to keep adding names of possibilities that the Seahawks could look at. But I genuinely think that this is going to be quite a defensive-minded draft for the Seahawks, and that what we're probably going to see is when free agency opens on Thursday and over the weekend, a lot of interest in the veteran offensive lineman. And I think we're probably going to see at least two signed in free agency, because this is generally not the year to go hunting for offensive linemen.
Well, I'm glad we got that out of the way early then, so people can, if we go in, should we not be surprised if the first three rounds, the Seahawks have 5 picks in the first 3 rounds, if they don't pick an offensive lineman with one of those first 5 picks, would you be shocked?
I think I'd be shocked. I think that they will add one, because the whole thought of competition, and, you know, there are some, I mean, Asiata, who I just mentioned there from Utah, is exactly the type of player I can imagine the Seahawks drafting, because he's, you know, great character, great personality, big family man, but he's really physical and intense. You know, he smashes people in the face when he's on the field. I mean, he's got exactly the same attitude as Garrett Bowles, and Garrett Bowles is the most physical, intimidating player in this draft class. So they're right up there in terms of intensity and the kind of grit that the Seahawks look for. So I wouldn't be surprised at all if they had a strong look at Asiata, maybe in the third round or maybe even the second round, depending on what they thought they could get. And, you know, 5 defensive players in a row seems like a bit of a stretch. You know, they're going to draft an offensive lineman at one point. And Pete Carroll did say in his end of season press conference that the three priorities were cornerback, linebacker, and offensive line. So I think that would indicate that they're going to draft at least one offensive lineman at some point. But, you know, I don't think you're going to solve any problems in this draft. I think you're going to add to the competition. And then I think the focus is probably going to be in those first few picks. Like I said, cornerback, maybe one of these really athletic, dynamic safeties that seem to be all over the place in this draft, and maybe a linebacker.
So, Rob, it occurs to me that with the Seahawks not offering a tender to Deshaun Shedd and allowing him to hit the open market, that maybe that the corner pick is going to be something that they address early. I mean, is there a guy that really stands out to you that you know, for a first or second round pick makes a lot of sense for the Seahawks with the things they look at in corners?
Well, that's the great thing about this draft is I could probably give you like three or four names that really sort of fit them. And the one that stands out more than any other is the Washington corner, Kevin King. And because the Seahawks have never drafted a cornerback before the fourth round before, and because they have got, you know, essentially the definitive defensive back guru as the head coach and the vice president of football operations, you know, they are very specific and, you know, they know what to look for. And it kind of always felt that if they were ever going to break the trend and draft a cornerback early, it would essentially have to be almost the perfect cornerback prospect that they would be drafting. And Kevin King is pretty much close to that perfect prospect. I mean, he has absolutely everything. He's got the length and the size that they like. You know, he's 6'3", 200 pounds. He's got the 32-inch arms, which is very important. He's got fat. He tested superbly in the three cone and the short shuttle. His three cone is faster than Patrick Peterson's. So, and Peterson's smaller. You know, he's not that huge, long corner that we you know, you see. His short shuttle was the best, I think, in the whole draft at any position. He just had a fantastic workout. I mean, his short shuttle was 3.89. It's the fastest, the second fastest in the last 5 years. And the guy who got the fastest one was 5'11 at about 195 pounds, called Will Davis in 2013. So he's got short area quickness, despite the fact he's massive. He's got the long speed. You know, that was always the concern with him, is the long speed. And he ran a 4.43. So these are the things you could challenge him to do. You could put him in the slot against a really quick twitch, you know, and Antonio Brown. We've seen Richard Sherman covering him in the past. You could put him in the slot against that guy, and he's got the short area quickness to handle that and at least have a chance to do a decent job there. He's got the size to match up against a, you know, a big receiving tight end or a, you know, a Mike Evans type. He's got the size and the length and the physicality to match up with them. And then if you were to put him on the outside against a burner, he could run downfield against them because he's got a 4.43 speed. So he's pretty much there in terms of what the Seahawks could, yeah, I can imagine Pete Carroll looking at this guy and saying, that's the type of cornerback prospect that I can work with. Get him in our camp and we will work with him and we will coach him up and we will make him great. The thing, the best way to describe him is he kind of like has the physical profile of Richard Sherman, but he's a better athlete. So the upside and the ceiling for this kind of a draft pick is that you end up with two Richard Shermans on the field, and that has to be very, very enticing for the Seahawks. And the way that he performed at the combine, I'm pretty sure he's going to end up going in the late first round, maybe even sooner. And if he's there at 26, he has to be one of maybe sort of four or five very realistic options for the Seahawks.
So from what you're saying, though, Rob, like, this does not sound like a guy who would be around at the bottom of the first draft, of the first round of the draft. Is that how deep this draft is in cornerbacks, that a guy like that would be available when the Seahawks pick?
That's the amazing thing about this draft, is that's exactly right. I mean, I could make the case for him. If the Seahawks were picking at number 15, I might make the case for Sidney Jones, his teammate in Washington, who is as equally as impressive, you know, in a very different way. He's not the same kind of player as Kevin King, but he's equally very, very talented. Then you could look at someone like Marlon Humphrey, who's like a Greek god who plays cornerback. I mean, his physical profile is fantastic. You know, some teams are going to really like Marshawn Lattimore, who is incredibly fast, great length, you know, very, very smooth and very natural cornerback. You know, some teams are going to love Green Connolly, the other Ohio State cornerback, who had just a beautiful workout the other day. I mean, you could just run through so many of these guys. Adoree Jackson, you know, some teams are going to want that type of player. Quincy Wilson at Florida, some guys are going to want that big, thumping, physical, you know, number two cornerback. Tre'Davious White is, you know, really athletic and had the number 18 jersey in LSU, which is like the coveted jersey, you know, that the players vote for who gets to wear that jersey, and he's had it for the last 2 years. So, yeah, I mean, this is the thing. I think in another draft, Kevin King would probably be a top 15 pick, but because there's legitimately about seven or eight cornerbacks that could go in the first round this year, it's going to be a case of, you know, which order do they go. And if Kevin King goes in the top 20, it just means that one of the others might last to 26, or a player at a different position, but it's still very appealing. He might be there for the Seahawks instead.
So I'm hearing that this draft is deep in cornerbacks. I've also heard that it's an incredible draft for tight ends. Now, we didn't necessarily think that the Seahawks would go tight end as early as they did last draft. Do you see them in the first three rounds maybe going tight end again with the idea that Jimmy Graham is on the last year of his contract, with the idea that Luke Wilson could be, you know, he's a free agent, he could be signing with another team, and that would just leave the team with Nick Vinette. Would this be the year to get another tight end?
Yeah, I think that there's definitely a chance that that could happen because, as you mentioned, I mean, the Jimmy Graham situation is pretty fluid for me. I wouldn't be looking to extend it into a new contract this offseason. I think that you could play that out in a year's time. The franchise tag for tight ends this year is actually less than Jimmy Graham's salary. So if he had a really great year, you know, I'd like 1,200 yards and 10 touchdowns, you know, fingers crossed that's what happens. But if that did happen, if, you know, if they actually found a way to involve him every week, then in a year's time, you could franchise tag him and he'd essentially be just adding an extra year to his contract at a similar salary. So, you know, I don't think there's any real pressure to get him signed up to a new deal, but you can play that by ear. I mean, if he has a really disappointing year, if you want to move on, you know, you get a compensatory pick in a year's time when he leaves. And you've already sort of prepared for the future. Luke Wilson, it's up in the air whether he's going to return. Doesn't look particularly likely. And Nick Vinette showed very little as a rookie. So it'd make sense to add another one at this point, and at least you've got a hedge there. So, you know, at least if Graham moves, you've got two guys that you've drafted in the first three rounds that, you know, you can feel good about. And it's not just taking one for the sake of it. As you mentioned, it's a good class. I mean, you're going to get four guys, I think, going into the top 45. So OJ Howard and David Njoku are probably going to go in the first round. Bookie Hodges and Evan Engram are probably going to go in the top 45. And then you've got maybe sort of like three or four others that are going to go in the first four rounds. I think the one that might be the most interesting for Seattle is George Kittle at Iowa, who had a really, really good workout at the combine. You know, was a lot more explosive and fast than people thought. He compares favorably to Luke Wilson in terms of a physical profile, but he's also considered to be a really good blocker. And if you've come from Iowa, where they basically run the ball every single play, he's going to be sort of ingrained into that kind of system. So he will be very comfortable, I think, playing in an offense like Seattle's.
Well, and that could also, with the idea that there aren't any tackles, maybe you get a guy who's, you know, a bit better at blocking as a tight end that you can bring in. That sounds right to me.
Yeah, any help you can get.
Right. I did want to touch on one other position on offense. I know this is a defensive draft, but I'm having trouble, you know, with some of these offensive guys just are exciting. And I think about the receiver from Clemson, Mike Williams, and the idea that he could potentially fall out of the first round based off of your what you've seen just out of the combine and what's been happening so far. Could he really slip to the second round?
Again, I think this is the indicative of the draft, really, that and I kind of made this point when I did the mock draft after the combine, is that I put Mike Williams out of the first round. And if, you know, if I did a second round, he would have been, you know, one of the first two or three picks in the second round. Mm-hmm. But if it wasn't him falling out of the first round, it was somebody else. You know, ultimately, I was going to be having a conversation with somebody on the blog an hour after I'd published this thing, with them asking, why have you not put this guy in? Mm-hmm. Because there's 45 players in this draft who could legitimately be in the first round, and not all of them are going to be there. So, you know, Mike Williams could go in the top 20. Corey Davis, the receiver at Western Michigan, could go in the top 20. I could also see them dropping out of the first round, because the thing with Mike Williams is that he, for me, in college, he's always been good, not great. There's not a lot of separation there, a lot of contested passes that he wins. He's played in the most explosive offense in college football, and his statistics are not amazing. You know, they're decent again, but it's not like he, you know, I think I'm right in saying that they've had receivers in the past who put a lot bigger yardage up than he has. And then you have this situation where he turns up at the combine and he's interviewed by the NFL Network, and they say, so you're not running the 40-yard dash today. And Steve Smith's there, and you know, I think Charles Davis said, we want to see you run. Why aren't you running? And he said, well, I had a long, hard season, and you know, I was really tired at the end of the season, and I kind of need a rest. So I'm not going to run the 40 now. I'm going to do everything else. And on the very same day, Deshaun Watson's running, jumping, throwing, doing absolutely everything, you know, having a million interviews and stuff like that. He's got all of the focus and the attention on him because he's a quarterback. And you think, if Deshaun Watson is not tired and can do all of these things, then Mike Williams can get out there and run 40 yards twice. So I think that teams will look at that and think, you've got something to hide. You're not going to run fast. And if he'll get to the fast track at Clemson and probably run a 4.4, and everyone will be like, yeah, we're going to add another tenth of a second to that. And if that's the case, then, you know, what are you talking about here? You're talking about a guy who is of decent size, who's not particularly quick. You know, we've seen players like this last until the top of the second round before. You know, Alshon Jeffrey a few years ago is a good example of that. And I think that could be where he ends up, but I also wouldn't be surprised if teams look at him. But there are so many good defensive players in this draft, and one or two really good offensive options as well. To me, feels like he's moved to the back of the queue, and there's other players who've pushed in front of him. You know, maybe Christian McCaffrey's, and if you're looking for a dynamic offensive weapon, you know, why not look at someone like Christian McCaffrey in the first round instead of Mike Williams? You know, if you're looking to enhance your passing game, McCaffrey's a really good option for that because he can act as a slot and a running back. So, these are the kind of conversations I think teams will have.
Well, going back to the defense. I know that that Pete Carroll said, you know, he mentioned linebacker as one of the need positions of need. And you've been tracking Hassan Reddick for a while, and then he has this just huge combine, and now it looks like he's not going to be available for the Seahawks. So what other linebackers are you maybe looking at for the Seahawks in the first couple of rounds?
It's quite a fascinating subject because I think that, I mean, obviously the Seahawks love really dynamic athletes. And yet KJ Wright is not, you know, an athlete. You know, Bobby Wagner's the most incredible athlete playing linebacker in the NFL. But KJ Wright is not. KJ Wright's a bigger, longer type of guy and ran a 4.7. So it kind of makes me think, yes, they love the super dynamic athlete like Hassan Reddick, but they would probably also consider the player with the mentality, the physicality, maybe some unique aspect like length, like KJ Wright has, who isn't a 4.4 runner or a 4.5 runner, but is just really solid. So for that reason, it makes me wonder whether Zach Cunningham Vanderbilt will still be an option for the Seahawks. And because he didn't run particularly well, maybe he falls into the sort of mid to late second round and you can go get a guy like Zach Cunningham who would offer really nice depth. Jared Davis at Florida didn't work out at the combine because of an injury, and his kind of stock's all over the place because if you go on ESPN, you know, Scouting, which is the Todd McShay vehicle, has him rated as the 61st best player in the draft. I know that Tony Pauline at Draft Analyst has him as rated as a third round pick, and yet you read sources from Bob McGinn, who's at the Journal Sentinel in Wisconsin, and they're, you know, league sources saying this guy's not going to get out the first round. So, you know, is Jared Davis going to be there for Seattle in the second round, or is he going to be off the ball before they even pick at 26? It's hard to say. And then you could kind of go through, there's Vince Beagle at Wisconsin, Kendall Beckwith, who got injured right at the end of the season for LSU, you know, could be a steal on the third day. Alexander Loney at Florida, Jared Davis's teammate, could be an option for them. There are some intriguing players. I mean, Raekwon McMillan had a much better combine than anybody expected. So there are going to be options there for them. There was a guy at Jordan Evans at Oklahoma today who didn't get invited to the combine, who had a really nice workout. So whether it's the first, second, third, or maybe even day three, you know, that they should be able to add some young depth to the Mike and the Will, which seems to be what Pete Carroll wants to do.
What about a guy like TJ Watt?
I really like TJ Watt. The thing about TJ Watt is I think that he's going to be a Sam, strong side linebacker. The thing that Carroll talked about was he wasn't happy. The exact quote was, you know, Bobby Wagner played too many snaps, 99% of the snaps. KJ Wright, 97, nearly 98% of the snaps. And that's not sustainable. You know, if you want those two players playing in front of the 5 years, you need to take some of the pressure off them, especially if you're going to play 4-2-5, which Seattle did an awful lot last year because it's putting all of the pressure and the stress on them. Mm-hmm. They're just getting smacked around like a running back. So you need to find guys that are going to support them and switch with them. And TJ Watt's very much, a Sam. I don't think you'd ever play him inside. So they might well look for a Sam linebacker. I mean, this is the thing. I mean, this is a whole different conversation. You know, the Seahawks ran nickels so often last year. Jeremy Lane played over 70% of the snaps, that they might be sort of moving on from the whole Sam linebacker concept, because if you play nickel and if they draft someone like Obi Melifonwu, for example, he's going to play as like a big nickel, and they're not even going to have a Sam on the field. But if they don't want to do that and they draft a cornerback outside instead, it's going to be harder maybe to find that big nickel unless they look at someone like Shalom Luani at Washington State or one of these other safeties maybe in the middle rounds, a Josh Jones, for example, or somebody like that. then they might have to go after a Sam linebacker. And TJ Watt is really, really good. You know, fantastically explosive. I did a piece today, which I published, which, you know, they've tried Cassius Marsh at strong side linebacker. And he physically is very, you know, in terms of his size and his height, exactly the same as TJ Watt. Agility wise was the big thing for Cassius Marsh. Cassius Marsh ran at like a 4.84 or something like that at his combine. But his agility testing was through the roof. Cassius Marsh is like one of the top 10 short shuttles in the last 10 years. It's ridiculous mm-hmm. agility for his size. That's why the Seahawks loved him. And TJ Watt beat Cassius Marsh. You know, he's much more agile. So, you know, if Cassius Marsh was an option at the Sam, TJ Watt could be an option at the Sam. So I think there's every chance that he could be on their radar. And the guy loves football. And, you know, the Seahawks don't just want athletes. They want guys who are absolutely, you know, gritty, that love the game, that really want to get out there and smash people around. So, you know, TJ Watt could definitely be an option for them.
And for those people who aren't familiar with that last name, Watt, his brother is JJ Watt, just to make it clear to people. So the gene pool is there with this guy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty good. And the dad actually is carrying a bit of weight these days. So if you know, if you ever saw JJ Watt and TJ Watt's dad, you would not believe that he had given, you know, his that he was related to them. But it's an incredible family. You know, that they have there's a fullback for, I think it's the Chargers, is it, or one of the other teams in the league. There's another, the third brother plays in the league as well. So as a fullback, so there's three of them in the league. TJ Watt has got the exact same intensity as JJ, and is really explosive. He kind of looks like, you know, young Clay Matthews, but maybe a more agile version. So, you know, I think whoever gets TJ Watt is going to get a young Clay Matthews, and that might be something the Seahawks look for. Another Sam linebacker option as well, who's really appealing, I think, is the Houston linebacker, Tyus Bowser, who is in, you know, very similar to TJ Watt in terms of the testing. You know, they tested very similarly at the combine. So I think either of those two could be an option maybe in the second round.
Well, Rob, I want to thank you for coming on. And before you go, I want to know, because I follow Seahawks draft blog like religiously at this time of year, but I'm kind of curious if there are any other, because I look at mock drafts, Rob, and especially after following your site, and I'll see certain mock drafts and I'll go, these guys don't even know what they're talking about when it comes to the Seahawks. Are there any mock drafts out there that you look at and guys that you look at and go, this guy at least knows what he's talking about when it comes to the Seahawks? Or are you it? Because that's a perfectly acceptable answer.
Yeah,
that would be my vote. He's it.
Just ignore all the rest. No, I mean, I read nearly every one of the national ones. So I know that people will sort of be quiet. I find Mel Kiper and Tom McShay really entertaining. I mean, you know, if I don't take them too seriously. I really enjoy all of the stuff that they do because they talk about the draft and there's a real passion for the draft there. And although, you know, they have very different opinions, that I think it's quite interesting insight. You know, I will follow Daniel Jeremiah's mock drafts. Lance Erlein's mock drafts are pretty interesting. I think Tony Pauline is fantastic at what he does and is a great draft insider. But the one thing that I think that is probably the best thing about Seahawks draft blog compared to the national ones is that we know the Seahawks. You know, the people in the community who comment on the blog, you know, a season ticket holders at CenturyLink Field, or they, you know, are obsessive Seahawks fans who watch every game. So they know the holes in the team. They know the players on the roster. They have listened to the press conferences. They've picked up the little nuggets that maybe Pete Carroll and John Schneider have said over the last few weeks. And we understand what they might go for. And I think the national media kind of just look at the Seahawks and think, offensive line. It's got to be offensive. They're going to take an offensive lineman and it's just going to be whoever's there. And it's, you know, you can't blame them for that. You know, they've seen what we've all seen in the offensive line. You know, if I was a Minnesota Vikings fan and was writing about that team, I'd probably put an offensive lineman in every single mock draft of the Seahawks, because that's what the perception is that that's the problem in Seattle. And yet, yeah, I think it's just having that greater knowledge of the team and sort of where they are right now, it makes you think, yeah, actually, they're probably going to look at this differently. They're probably going to go with the O-line in free agency, get some experience. I think they're going to make a really interesting move on the offensive line. I think we're going to be impressed with one of the additions they make on the offensive line. I think it's going to be one of the bigger names. It's not going to be Jamarcus Webb or Bradley Saul this year. I think they're going to do something that, you know, is going to get people sitting out the seat and thinking, yeah, that's a good move. And that's going to free them up to to look at the defense and bring some defensive guys in. And, I think that's probably the difference with it. And, frequently I will get an email from somebody like a Tampa Bay fan who says, look, I follow the blog, even though it's a Seahawks blog. You know, I find it very interesting, but you've got this pick wrong this week. We're not going to draft a safety in the first round. We're not going to draft a cornerback in the first round. I find that really useful because then, I'm not an expert about all the other 31 teams. So any kind of information that I get, and I do spend a bit of time, looking at the forums and stuff like that, seeing what other fans are talking about. I know other fans of other teams, so I can sort of pick their brains a little bit and try and find out the direction that they're going. And I think with the national media, it kind of is really as simple as, Seahawks O-line, this team needs a quarterback, so we'll give them one. This team needs a receiver, so we'll give them one. And there's not really much more thought than that when they're putting a mock together. So I think that's one of the things about a team-specific blog, is it kind of really understands the team that it's writing about.
Well, there you go. So for all our listeners, if you're looking at other mock drafts, you're wasting your time. Go to SeahawksDraftBlog.com and just get all your information there. Save yourself the time and tune in to 3000 NFL Mock Draft too, because then you'll get the in-depth thinking there with Rob Staton.
Yeah, if you like a good 2-hour podcast, then if you're going on a long drive somewhere, then the podcast's good.
Well, Rob, really want to thank you for coming on again, and I'm sure we'll be looking for you again as the draft gets a little bit closer.
Yeah, anytime, guys.
Thanks again to Rob Staton of SeahawksDraftBlog.com. You can follow him on Twitter at Rob Staton. Adam, how do you feel about being schooled on arm length by Rob?
Well, I needed to know. It's something that's been bothering me. I mean, clearly. I mean, he makes some solid points, but still, I mean, if a guy's got other tangible skills, like I think you can get around it.
Well, and that's just like your takeaway with Russell, his height does affect him in certain aspects of the game, but he's able to compensate by being great at other things. And
exactly.
And linemen can compensate by being great at other things too, although it is a bit of a handicap in certain aspects of the game.
Right. That's exactly it. So, but we'll see. We'll see what happens. I still love Lamp. If he's there, I wouldn't mind taking him. But then again, I mean, the way he talked about that corner from Washington, man, like, I kind of do want two Richard Shermans out there.
Uh-huh.
and with Sherman, let's not lie, getting a little older and towards the end of his contract, like, you got to keep reloading with top tier talent. So I don't know, man. I don't know. I can see the Seahawks going a ton of different ways, and I'm not going to be mad about it.
Well, and one thing that we did find out since that interview with Rob, Sidney Jones on Pro Day, the other corner from University of Washington, tears his Achilles.
Oh, are you serious? Oh,
man. And Sidney Jones was expected to go like top 10, top 15.
And that stinks
for a corner.
That stinks for him, and it stinks for us, because that's one more corner out of the mix to have the good ones fall to you. So,
but maybe a guy that you'd consider if he's still around there in the third, because
yeah, right, coming off the injury. Yeah, that's something to think about. One of the things that I wish I would have brought up with Rob was the idea that what if we traded up to get like Leonard Fournette or that kid from Florida State, the running back? They're really good.
Leonard Fournette's really good.
Kid from Florida State's super good too. He's a playmaker, man. Like I almost wouldn't mind to see us trade up and get like another stud running back. That'd be pretty sweet.
Well, and that's the type of trade that you would have to put together. You remember when the Falcons traded up to get Julio Jones?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they put together a huge trade package because they had to move up some 20 spots on the draft
sure.
board to get Julio.
Yeah.
I mean, you would have to put together a big package of draft picks. I don't know if the Seahawks would be willing to do that, but for a guy like Leonard Fournette, yeah, that would be Dalvin Cook, I think, is the Florida
Dalvin
State
Cook,
guy.
That's the kid. Yeah. He's talented, man. He's really good. I'd be pretty excited to have one of those two dudes on the team. In fact,
and then you have Christian McCaffrey is pretty exciting as a runner too.
That's a guy I haven't watched at all. I don't know. I don't have a sense of him as a player. I liked his dad. Mm-hmm. I guess that's the best I could say. But yeah, I wouldn't be sad if we came away with one of the big time backs. That's for sure.
Well, we will have to ask him that next time he's on the show.
Yeah,
going back, I'm surprised I didn't get more comments about the media being after Richard Sherman in the last show.
Yeah. Nobody came rushing to Richard Sherman's defense.
No, or nobody came to say that I was crazy about thinking that, ESPN could be out to get him.
No, nobody. Apparently that was only something you wondered about, Brandon.
just me wondering.
Yeah. And that's fine. This is your show. You can put on there whatever you want. That's the beauty. And everybody else just has to listen to it and be interested or not. That's up to them.
Well, I was going to ask you earlier on in the show if there are any other free agency surprises, you know, apart from the offensive tackle market just being huge. Calais Campbell goes and signs a 4-year, $60 million deal with the Jaguars, yeah. $30 million guaranteed. I don't, when we were talking about Calais Campbell as a possibility, you know, we threw it out there to people that you had $15 million to spend in free agency.
I know.
Calais Campbell would have taken up that entire 15 mil.
And more. Yeah, I just, wow. Wow to that signing. I mean, unbelievable. But, you know, the Jacksonville Jaguars are winning free agency, man. Just listen to Charlie Casserly talk about it on NFL Network. I mean, they're crushing it. They're crushing it. I've never seen a team win free agency and then win the Super Bowl.
Oh, no.
Well, maybe only once. And that's when Reggie White went to the Packers.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's it.
That's about it.
Yeah. Otherwise, it doesn't work. Ask Nnamdi Asamoah how that works out.
Yeah. Well, the Packers won the lottery when they got Reggie White out of free agency.
Oh, I know. Yeah. It's just none of those. It's so rare that there's a once in a generation talent available in his prime for you to sign that you can, you know, actually afford. Mm-hmm. Like, good luck with that. I mean,
it doesn't happen.
Otherwise, you're just overpaying for mid-tier dudes, you know, all over the place. Free agency is not where you build a team. That's one of the things. I mean, it is a little disappointing that we didn't land TJ Lang, right? But I am much happier watching my team do little in free agency and try to build a team the right way. I'm way more happy watching that. I'm very comfortable with that than watching teams like the Jaguars pull the same mistake that, you know, the Buccaneers pulled the year before and, you know, the Eagles before that and whatever, you know, like just it's stupid.
Well, it just means that the Seahawks knocked it out of the park in their 2011 draft, their 2012 draft, able to have those kind of guys that you have no choice but to say, yes, we have to sign these guys because we can't let them go to free agency.
Right, right. I mean, there comes a point, though, where you got to start to make tough decisions and let dudes go a little earlier than you'd like to. I mean, we'll talk a little bit about that more, I believe, next show. And I've got a little bit to that point in my do better as well. But, yeah. It's tough. This year and next year is probably your last ride with these core dudes for the most part. And then you're going to start to see some real change.
Yeah, it's not fun looking at the list of 2018 free agents. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, and you better hope that John Schneider's ready to knock a draft out of the park like he did, back in the day. I mean, because we're going to need another home run draft like that.
Moving on back to free agents.
Mm-hmm.
I threw it out there, you know, give people 15 mil to spend.
Right.
And got a couple emails here. First one here from John Davison says, OK, fellas, it's Thursday morning and I'm waiting for 9 p.m. tonight, our time, for the circus to kick off. Apparently, there will be updates on Sky, our cable provider, so I will be tuning in to watch. I thought I would enter the $15 million game, but I learned one thing, and that it's really difficult being John Schneider. So he has gone up in my estimation. So, best player or need position? Well, we still have an open window and are not far off. So I think it's obvious that O-line needs some help, and that's where I'm starting with tackle. But who? Wagner has now gone, and $9 million we could have afforded, so I must admit I don't know who to go for. My next would be a defensive end, but I'm looking this morning, and Campbell is going to the Jags, so again, I'm not sure. My last pick would be a DB, now that Shedd is a free agent. But again, I don't have a specific player. It's not a brilliant free agency this time around, so if I didn't get a position this time, I would pick up one in the draft. So overall, I don't know who to get and don't know the positions I want to fill. So John Davison, GM, do better.
I like it, John. Well, he brings up a great point in the idea that the team's in a spot right now that you can really go in a lot of different directions. And this is a real transitional year in a lot of ways. And, you know, I guess when I've been looking at it and something that concerns me a little bit is where we're at when it comes to safety. Because I just saw a video or a picture of Earl Thomas running for the first time on a zero gravity treadmill. And then
entered the future. We don't have a hoverboard yet, but we have zero gravity treadmills.
Right.
That's kind
of
cool.
So one of our starting safeties is just starting to run for the first time this offseason. And then I see a post just the other day that our starting strong safety is just starting to walk again for the first time this offseason. And then we have nobody else. I'm starting to get a little worried about safety position.
I can see where you'd be worried, but there's a long off season. Those guys will get it done. Well,
God help us. Yeah, let's hope so.
We're counting on it, Adam. I need your positive thoughts, positive vibes.
Okay. All right.
But we got another email here from Ross Wilwerding. And his big free agency move, he wanted to go after Ricky Wagner to start at right tackle and says, I love the other four guys on our starting O-line. Yes, Adam, including Fant.
Ah!
Also, unrelated, love Reese to back up both tackle spots. And he'd like to see both Cam and Britt get an extension, both 3 years, front loading those deals a little bit to prepare to have room to extend Frank Clark next year. And he says, if we pick up Wagner, I would like to see the Hawks' first three picks going toward adding to the defense, specifically the secondary. See, Ross feels your pain here, too, and really love the idea of getting a third safety and playing more in big nickel.
I like the idea of the big nickel. That was something that they talked a little bit about last offseason when they brought in Brandon Browner. I still think that that's a cool way to go in this day and age. Look, for everybody who really likes Fant, does the offseason dull people's brains? Like, I mean, I love Ross, I do, but what do you not remember the Olay machine that was George Fant? Do I have to go back on NFL films and like do a cut up of every whiff of George Fant from the year so that like and put him back to back so everybody can remember? Do they have whiff amnesia? Like, what has happened here? What has happened here? I don't understand it. He stinks.
I think maybe the thinking is that, you know, he had enough talent to make the jump to where he got to from the preseason. And if Russell only has to worry about one spot on the offensive line, right, that's where he knows the pressure's coming from. And he can find his way out of it.
No, great. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, let's take it and be like, well, you know, we'll go from a dumpster fire of an offensive line to, you know, maybe just like a grease fire in your kitchen. You know, just a little, you know, not quite as bad, a little smaller, you know.
The house is still burning down.
The house is still burning down, but you know, it's just you got a little more time to deal with it, you know. Like maybe the fire department can get there to help you. No, let's fix it all. God, no more Fant. He can stay. He can learn behind Luke Jokel for a year. That sounds real good to me.
No, I like the idea of having him learn behind somebody for another year and assessing it after another year.
Yes, I love the idea that he can develop. Absolutely.
And potentially come in a backup role if need be.
Right. But just right meow, he's not that guy. He's not a starting left tackle.
That's the point that I'm trying to make about George Fant is that you can still consider what he did last year to be a success. Like that is still a really cool story. Like it's okay if all he does is develop into a backup left tackle after coming into the league and just playing basketball in high school. Like that's still a pretty successful story.
I swear to God, if you ever were a director of a movie, you would film the whole thing with a soft focus filter. You know, like it'd be some touchy feely, you know, story, you know, there where everything's puppies and rainbows. And like, you know, like there's
Rudy is a great football movie. And all that guy did was actually make it on the field. OK, so George Fant could be a much better story than that.
That's why it was a good story. He couldn't play and he got out there for a token play when it didn't matter. That's fine. He wasn't entrusted with this, making sure that the franchise quarterback, the savior of your franchise, doesn't get smashed and dead behind your offensive line. That's when it's no longer a success. That's when it's DEFCON 4000. Okay.
So remake Rudy as and Rudy is like the starting cornerback,
yes,
opposite somebody who's really good, and then just have him get burned game after game, and your team goes into the dumpster. Is that is that how you'd like to see Rudy remade?
Well, I mean, if you're going to make it and try to make it a parallel to the George Fant story, then yes, that's how you do it.
Another email here from Brett in Sydney says, thanks, Adam and Brandon, for keeping the show fresh and interesting during the offseason.
Well, that's
in
nice response, to say. We just talked about remaking Rudy.
In response to your question about which position is the priority for the Hawks this offseason, I am going to say the defensive line. The Hawks were just not as scary this year on defense. In previous years, they were a collective wrecking ball for offenses. But this year, they were just solid. This especially showed up in the playoff loss to Atlanta, but also against lesser-ranked teams like the Bills, where the Hawks were too easy to score against. The O-line is still a massive concern for the Hawks. It's in its current state, I think the Hawks should definitely consider kicking the tires on the budget price, unrestricted free agent Adam Emmert, to see if he can help out an offensive tackle.
There would be your feel-good story, Brandon, right there. But I can hear the movie trailer already in my head, Brandon, you know. Nobody thought that a middle-aged white man from Montana could go from basic poverty to NFL stardom at left tackle. Follow us on his amazing journey.
You it would have to be for long snapper.
Yes. I think I could I could make a run at long snapper.
Yeah.
I could, because I can snap a ball and get dumped on my ass. Like, I can
and
do that.
And you could be in there for your token preseason play.
Yeah, exactly. That's what we need. If they're not going to invite me to the stupid journalist combine, then I want a token snap at long snapper.
Final email here from Eric in Anchorage. Says, hey guys, greetings from Anchorage, Alaska. I just want to thank you guys for making the offseason suck less. As far as offensive needs, I think maybe we could try putting George Fant in at guard and move Ifedi to right tackle. I agree with Adam that Forrest Lamp is a cool name, and he was one of the players I already picture on this team. And closes it by saying, you guys should do a podcast with Norbcam. He's one of the few Seahawks YouTubers. P.S. You guys rock and are both better at life than Skip Bayless.
Well, thanks, dude. We've talked to Norb before.
Yeah. And we'll probably talk to him again, probably coming up in May, because that's generally when he and others put together a little Seahawks deal. It's usually toward the end of May, about the time the Seahawkers banquet's coming up, too. And I see that's already scheduled for May 20th, Armed Forces Day. Mm-hmm. So tickets are already on sale at Seahawkers.org. And $41 gets you a ticket to the Seahawkers banquet. It's all you can eat food buffet and lots of Seahawks fans. And then I think Norb and those guys usually schedule an event, because it was either right before or right after the banquet last year, because we hit both in the same weekend. So, yeah, we'll have Norb back on the show for sure.
Oh, for sure. And he's a great watch, too. Like, if you enjoy Seahawks stuff, I'm going to guess you do if you've listened to an hour plus of us two, you know, Gomers talk Hawks. He's a great dude to look up on YouTube. Super entertaining and a cool guy in real life, too. Like, he's a nice guy.
Yeah. All right, Adam, what do you say we get on to do better and better at life?
What, nobody got in the flock this week?
Nobody. Yeah, come on, people. GetInTheFlock.com.
Yeah. How are we going to get to 300 patrons if we go week skunked or a week skunked? This is unacceptable, man.
I don't know. Maybe do we need to give away a signed Pete Carroll mini helmet away to our new flock members at GetInTheFlock.com? Because if we have to give it away sooner to get more people into it, maybe once we get to 300, we just throw it in a drawing for all the flock members.
Yeah, there we go. Okay. Yeah, that's what we do. Let's do it.
Let's get the 300, and then we'll pick a random name out of the bunch of the members in the flock, and you get a Pete Carroll autographed mini helmet.
Perfect. All right. I like this plan. See, sometimes we just got to work this stuff out live and in person like this. You know, this is good stuff.
All right. Well, what do you say we get on to do better and better at life now?
Right on, man. All right. I'm writing the DCH a little note. He had the thing on the Ring of Honor. He was asking, so no show this week since we didn't sign TJ Lang. And so I'm writing him a message as we speak right now, let him know that I'm about to do better right now.
Well, while you're doing that, I will give my do better, Adam, because okay. I'm now convinced that we on our show, we need to do a mock draft because we.
You are going off your skis today, my friend. Be careful.
We need to be sure that we do something crazy so we can get in the news. And then so let's put together a mock draft and have one of the top quarterbacks fall into the mm-hmm. Seahawks so they can take him. Because
sure.
Why wouldn't they? I went on USA Today. And actually this popped up in my alerts because, you know, I'm always on the lookout for some good Pete Prisco news. Well, USA Today, Luke Easterling.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the headline.
Okay.
2017 NFL mock draft. Jets pull a big surprise at quarterback.
Oh, wow.
It's a USA Today article by Luke Easterling reporting on Pete Prisco of CBS Sports, reporting on his mock draft. Apparently, the Jets picked up a quarterback. Pete Prisco mocks a quarterback to the Jets in the draft. And it's newsworthy enough for USA Today and Luke Easterling to do a story on this. What's your next step, USA Today? Are you going to report on like fantasy football games? And an incredible point swing. Bauchikahauschka came back from 70 points down after Drew Brees and Odell Beckham combined for 72 fantasy points. We've reached out to the loser every day I'm wrestling for comment, but they did not return our calls in time for the report. That's what's next.
This is a problem. Just the headline. Jets make a surprise?
Yeah, Jets pull a big surprise at quarterback.
No, the Jets didn't pull catfish. Okay? Pete Prisco decided that the Jets, in his mind, ought to take some quarterback on the board. That's so stupid. It's so stupid. It's a new story about somebody's imagination.
Right.
Well, fan-freaking-tastic.
So USA Today, Luke Easterling, for this nonsense, do better.
That is literally fake news.
Literally.
It's literally fake news.
It's fake news about fake news.
Well, no, it's real. It's an attempt at real news about fake news. That's what it is. Trying to make something that is imaginary a real story.
Yeah. And this story, this is why they do it. This story has been shared 330 times.
That's 330 times. Those are 330 dumb people. Those are dumb people.
Unless they're sharing it to say to their friends, look how dumb this article is. That could be the case.
All right. I'm willing to accept that. 315. That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, my do better this week, Brandon. That was a good do better by you, by the way.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, that was really good. My do better this week is for anybody that is a GM in this league and they're sitting at their office at their desk and the caller ID pops up and the phone rings and it's Bill Belichick of the New England Patriots. My do better is for any GM that answers the damn phone.
Just hang up.
What are you doing? Yeah, just lift it up and set it right back down. Just click as fast as possible.
If it's Boston area code, just don't answer.
Yeah. Yeah, if it's Bill Belichick, do not listen to him for 2 seconds because he obviously puts a spell on people and gets them to do something stupid that helps out the Patriots for no reason whatsoever. I don't understand it. The latest is two trades that just happened here since the start of free agency. The first being the New England Patriots trade their second round pick to the Carolina Panthers for Coney Ealy, defensive end, who's talented. Guy's got talent.
Yeah, he's up and down, but he's not bad.
Yeah, he's pretty good. I mean, if you told me today that we ended up with Ealy in this deal, I'm excited about that deal. So they trade their second round, the Patriots do, to the Panthers for Coney Ealy and their third round pick, the Panthers' third round pick, which when you think about it, the Panthers finished, you know, terribly last year. They pick really high in the third round. The Patriots, I don't know, won the freaking Super Bowl and so are picking last in the second round. The difference is
spots.
10 spots?
Maybe.
So basically, the Patriots get Coney Ealy just for the privilege of picking, you know, 10, 10 spots later in the draft.
Yeah, that's it.
Whoop-de-doo-dah, they got Coney Ealy for free. They got Coney Ealy for free. Don't answer the phone. How did you get talked into that? I can't understand that for life. Oh, well, thanks, Bill. I guess I get a second rounder instead of a third instead of doing the math. I can't figure it out for the life of me.
Yeah.
But he's not the only dumbass in this situation. All right. Bill Belichick also gives the New Orleans Saints a call. Bring. What's up, Sean Payton? Yeah, who's your best receiver? We could really use one of those. Oh, cool. Well, what can I do to help, Bill? Well, why don't you send me Brandon Cooks for our first and first and a third, and you give us back a fourth too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So basically, they give up their first round pick, which again was the last
catfish
pick in the first round. It's basically a second round pick to get Brandon Cooks, who's a young, talented receiver. And then they flip-flop a third and a fourth-round pick, which, again, it was just a matter of 15 spots or so.
Yeah.
So, basically, they give up the equivalent of a high second-round draft pick for Brandon Cooks. Here you go. I mean, why did he put a bow on Brandon Cooks when he kicked him onto the plane? Is that what Sean Payton did? Do not answer the damn phone. Do not. He will sucker you into something stupid. Don't do it. It's
Does
a bad
Belichick
idea.
Have like those sirens, like that sailors hear, like when they pick up the phone, that's like, what am I hearing in the background? Is it some siren song?
Yeah. And they can't turn away.
They can't turn away. And they have to help the Patriots at that point. Oh yeah. We know you just won a Super Bowl, but how can we help make you better?
I think it's even different than that. I think he uses the dark side of the Force, much like Obi-Wan used to do. Like, I mean, but obviously from the good side, it'd be like, these are not the droids you were looking for.
Yeah.
And like, dude's like, oh, these are totally not the droids that we're looking for. I think that's what Bill Belichick does. He calls up and says, Coney Ealy's not the defensive end that you want. He's like, you're right. Coney Ealy's not the defensive end that I want. How can I get him to you, Bill? Like, seriously, I just don't do it. So, for any GM who picks up the phone when Bill Belichick calls, do better. Stop helping them.
Just put a block on the 617 area code. Just tell your secretary, don't allow calls from the 617 to come through.
No, it's going to end badly for you. Stop helping them.
All right, on to Better at Life. And my Better at Life this week is for Michael Bennett. News came out this week that Bennett plans to donate his entire 2017 endorsement money. All the money he gets from his endorsements, that money's going to charity. And it's pretty cool the types of charities that he is planning on giving to as well. His endorsements money, it's going to be going to science, technology, engineering, arts, and math, and cool. Programs in minority communities. And half of the money that he gets from the sale of his number 72 jersey. So in addition to his endorsement money going to, science type programs in minority communities, the proceeds, half of the proceeds from his Seahawks jerseys are going toward inner city garden projects because, you know, he's been endorsing, you know, making sure right nutrition and access to healthy foods and that sort of thing. We know Michael Bennett's into that. So that's where his jersey money's going. So for Michael Bennett, I mean, that, and he said he was inspired by Chance the Rapper, who donated $1 million to Chicago
Public
Schools.
Chance the Rapper?
I don't know, but he was inspired by him.
All right.
It's not, who he is not important. The important thing is that he inspired Michael Bennett to do good things. And for that, Michael Bennett, better at life than Skip Bayless.
Those are all cool things he's given his money to, no doubt. Like, I really cool stuff. But I only have one question, Brandon. This is the same guy that was
catfish
all last year about not getting enough money. And now he's giving it all away.
He didn't have enough money to give away, clearly.
Yeah, well, you know, if he was into charity and helping people out, he could have helped out Russell Wilson in his health by maybe not demanding a bunch of new money so that, I don't know, maybe we could pay a couple big time offensive linemen. I'm just saying. You know, if you're feeling real charitable,
I'm seeing that there's a way around this, too, because if Michael Bennett just wanted to give money away,
right,
you go talk. You have the most philanthropic owner, one of the most philanthropic people in the world in Paul Allen owning the Seahawks. And you just say, hey, Mr. Allen, here's a really good charity I would like to see supported. And I don't see Paul Allen having an issue with that. If he's already giving away a lot of money, why not send it the way of the players and their interests?
This may be against the CBA. It may be against the rules or whatever. But yeah, the idea being is like,
if anybody were to find out, it might be.
Right. But the idea, you know, being is like, look, I really care about these things. I also care about my team. So let's not make this money count against the cap. Like, you know, just hook up some kids with some science and technology and gardens. Yeah. Like, can you do that for me, Paul? And I'm pretty sure he'd have been like, yeah, that's kind of in my wheelhouse, being that, like, I'm a giant philanthropist and I'm rich as hell. So, like, no problem. I think I got your back. But him giving away all this money, I guess he really does live up to the nickname Black Santa.
That's true.
All right, man. My better at life than Skip Bayless this week is for somebody who also was giving some things away. For those of you who don't know, the NBA in basketball is my second favorite sport. I don't follow it super intently. When we talk about bandwagon fans, my favorite team in the NBA is the Boston Celtics. And I'm close to a bandwagon fan in the sense that I don't really follow the team when they're not good. And, you know, I do when they are. But I'm always a Celtics fan.
That's fair weather. That's not bandwagon. That's fair weather.
Fair weather. And that's fair. Yeah, I would totally wear that label on that. But I do like the Boston Celtics. And a couple weeks ago, one of the all-time greats for the Celtics, Paul Pierce, played his last regular season game in the Boston Garden. He now plays for the LA Clippers. And he got to get in the game with, you know, like 30 seconds left or something like that. Chucks up a three late, you know, right as the game's expiring, and drains it, right? It's an awesome moment. The crowd goes wild. He had a big video montage before the game where Boston fans appreciated him and all that. Kevin Garnett makes an appearance in it. All those things. An all-time Celtic legend. I love the truth. I love Paul Pierce. That was the final home game for the Celtics before they were to head onto the road and for a long road trip for a couple weeks. Well, they just returned yesterday from this long road trip, and when they got to the locker room, they found a signed Paul Pierce jersey on every player's chair.
How nice.
Paul Pierce decided that, you know, he would give back a little bit to the guys on this team and this iteration of the Celtics. And, you know, we all know about how players exchange jerseys and stuff and how that's a thing for the, you know, the players in the league, whether that's NFL or NBA or whatever, right?
Yeah.
I thought that was a really cool gesture, a very, you know, very generous one for one of the all-time greats who's going out this year. I just wanted to get for an amazing career, for the great memories, for being an awesome Celtic, and for giving all those dudes a jersey. Paul Pierce, the truth, better at life than Skip Bayless.
That is a cool nickname, too.
Isn't it, though? And he was the truth, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's clutch.
And Gary Payton, the glove. Cool nicknames, but the truth, that's a good nickname.
Yeah. I got an idea for any other NBA player searching for a nickname. Don't use Superman.
I think it's been used a couple times.
A few. Yeah. Unless you want to get in a beef with Shaq, you know, like, and have him threaten your life over Twitter.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, maybe don't use that.
Maybe it's worn out now. The magic's worn off.
Dude, the magic wore off of Superman like 17 movies ago. I think we've squeezed all of the Superman story out of that narrative. I think we've done it.
All right, Adam. Well, wrapping up the show, really want to thank Rob State for coming on. Yeah, I was looking at this. This might be something that we do in the next coming shows. Players to profile, because looking at WalterFootball.com, the Seahawks have met with a number of guys: Isaac Asiata, Anthony Auclair, Buda Baker, Zach Brenner, Obi Malafamu. You know, some of these guys that we actually heard.
You're making these names up.
I'm not. These are guys that are actually in the draft.
Did you practice this string of names before you put it out there? I'm very impressed.
Oh, no. This is all. I didn't even get to Shalom Luani. I mean,
you're Shalom Luani.
But these are guys that, and we've talked about this in past years, guys that the team meets with. There's always mm-hmm. two or three or four guys that end up making the team. George Fant was a guy that got, you know, that the Seahawks met with. I don't know if it was an official visit to the VMAC, but you know that a couple of these guys that they meet with are ultimately going to be members of the team through the draft. So maybe look a little bit closer at some of these guys. And I was already looking at Buddha Baker. And he said,
let me guess, he's a badminton champion.
No,
going to look to play offensive line.
No, he played safety for the University of Washington.
Like football.
He played real football.
Okay. All right.
This is an amazing secondary the University of Washington had. They have Buddha Baker. He's expected to go in the first or second round. Mm-hmm. They had Sidney Jones, who was expected to go in the top half of the first round. Mm-hmm. They have that King dude that Rob was talking about expected to go in the first round.
Yeah.
I mean, that's three dudes that are in the first and second round playing in the secondary for the University of Washington last year.
How did they not win a national championship again?
I mean, I don't know.
I mean, they played Alabama. Was that your answer?
Not win when they had all their dudes. They had Odell Beckham and the other running back. And
because this is 2 years in a row now where Washington has produced a lot of high end players on defense in the draft.
Well, they were up there. They were top four, right?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, that's how they didn't win the national championship. They played Alabama.
Yeah.
And they have in Washington have the dude that runs like a 2.140.
Oh, the receiver. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That guy freaking flies.
He's going to go top 15. Probably.
This should have been my better life. Did you see Bo Jackson's tweet regarding that?
Welcome to the club, essentially.
Yeah. Welcome to the sub 4.2 club.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because the dirty little secret is John Ross is not the fastest man to ever run the 40 at the combine. It's Bo Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
Vincent Jackson ran the 40 in reportedly 4.12. Now, Bo decided to clarify that because that wasn't exactly true. I mean, because of the legend of Bo, you know, it was 4.13. So that's how fast he ran it at 240 pounds.
And the point that I was going to make with Buddha Baker, though, the craziest question that he got at the combine was, how do you get 37 cents using 8 coins?
What?
Hey, it's a math question.
Yeah, who gives a catfish? Would be my answer. That you know what it will cost when it's 37 cents. I swipe my card and it comes out of my bank account, and I look at what's left.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, see, there you go. You're old school. Like, you should know math, and just like a kid coming out these days, it doesn't matter.
There's a reason why I got into journalism, and that was my major, because I can't do math. I'm horrible at the math.
Clearly. Because it doesn't take long to figure this out. It's you don't have to even use like half nickels or thrimes.
Anything weird? Yeah, that's cool. Is it a bunch of nickels?
Mostly nickels, but also a couple pennies and a dime. But
okay, there you go.
But yeah.
Plus, I'm hungover. Don't make me do math right now.
I'm sorry. I apologize.
Jesus,
it's not the time.
No.
Well, Adam, good show this week. What do you say we get on out of here?
Sounds good, man. With that.
There's only one thing left to say.
Go Hawks. Screw math.
Go Hawks.
The drive to go further and reach higher. The same thing that inspires you inspires us. At Strayer University, we're always searching for new ways to make education more affordable. That's why we offer access to up to 10 no-cost gen ed courses to help you save time and money so you can keep striving. Visit strayer.edu to learn more. No-cost gen eds provided by Strayer University affiliates of Feel Learning. Eligibility rules apply. Connect with us for details. Strayer University is certified to operate in Virginia by CHEV.